We're holding on page Yud Gimel in Yevamos Ois Lamed. Now that we've talked about the mitzvah of getting married and Puruvu, so Mishnah goes on to mention din that if a couple has been married for 10 years and they don't have any children, then they have to get divorced. In practice, we don't do that nowadays. There's a lot, there's quite a bit about that. The Rivosh already, a late Rishon, says that we don't do that because realistically, people aren't going to listen, and it's going to just end up causing a lot of friction. And there's a good deal of discussion among the poskim all about that. There was actually an opinion based on what we're going to learn here in the Gemara that maybe that 10 years applies only in Eretz Yisrael, although most of the poskim disagree with that point. In any case, so the Gemara says Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Nosa isha v'shoha ima yud shanim. If a man and woman got married and they lived together for 10 years, v'lo yolda, and she hasn't given birth, and for that matter, poskim also talk about that it would also apply if she did give birth and the children passed away. Rachmana litzlan yotzi v'yitin ksuba. And then he divorces her and pays her her ksuba. Shemalei zochali he bonus mimena, because he may have not have had the schus to be built up from her. In other words, it may be that minashamayim he's supposed to have children, but not necessarily with her. Biologically, also sometimes it happens that both the man and the woman are fertile, but there's some incompatibility between them, blood types or what have you, that prevents them from having viable children. The Gemara.
What about a shaman compatible?
What about a what?
What?
What about a
What
what?
about the neshama? It's
What
not
about the neshama?
animal.
That's another matter, but
Animals
we're not dealing with that. We're dealing with the gashmiest. We're
are.
dealing with yeah, we're dealing with the gashmiistical level, and we're talking about the actual. There may be gzeira min hashamayim that this couple together are not going to have children, but each one of them individually with another spouse would. Further on, actually, the Gemara asks, given that we don't know, then why does he have to pay her uksuba? Why not say amotzi mechavel baraya? If she wants to collect her uksuba, she should have to prove that she's actually fertile. And the Gemara deals with that briefly further on. The Rivosh in that shuvah also points out, actually, it really depends. If we know for a fact that the man is infertile, then we don't even wait. Then there's no. If we know that the man is infertile, then there's no sense in asking him to divorce because he's not going to be able to have children anyhow, and she's not mitzvahan piri v'rivya. If she wants to have children, now the Gemara does talk about later on a woman, even though she doesn't have a mitzvah pruvu, she may well want to have children to support her in her old age. So if she wants to do that, that's fine. She can ask for a divorce on those grounds, but she doesn't have a mitzvah to do that per se. It's only the man has a mitzvah pruvu. So if we know for a fact that she's infertile, then the Rivosh says we don't even wait the 10 years. Why wait if we know anyway that she's incapable of having children and he might well be able to? If we know that he's the one who's infertile, then there's no sense in having them get divorced anyhow, because anyway, he's not going to be able to have children. What we're talking about is where we don't know. Now, there is also the point. The Gemara does also deal with the point that that why don't we say why doesn't he just marry? Why doesn't he just marry a second wife before Cherem Diyar Ben Egoshim? You were allowed to, after all. And the Gemara mentions that there are opinions that he's not allowed to do that without his wife's consent anyhow. So in that case, he may not have that option. And besides that, the Chachamim don't want to have. The fact is, it's not necessarily he's not going to be he's gonna want not going to want to. She may not agree, etc. So therefore, the Chachamim are going to impose this rule. They have to get divorced. So continues the Gemara. Afal pishein raya ladover. Now, even though there's not a solid proof for the 10 year cutoff in a pasuk, zecher ladover, there is nevertheless a remembrance. There's a hint to it in that we find that Avraham was married to Sarah, but the and then eventually he married Hagar as well. When was that? Miketz eser shanim l'sheves Avram be'eretz Canaan. When 10 years had passed after Avram and Sarah were living in Eretz Canaan, because they moved there when Avraham was 75, as it says at the beginning of Parshas Lach Lecha. Yishmael was born when Avraham was 86. Since a pregnancy is 9 months, and for that matter, actually, Rashi mentions on the Pesukim that Hagar had a first pregnancy and then she miscarried. And then it comes out Avraham married her when he was 85. So that was 10 years after they had arrived in Eretz Yisrael. So the lamdacha that teaches you she'in yeshivas chutz la'aretz olalo min aminyan. The 10 years you don't count in the years that he lived in chutz la'aretz, because after all he and Sarah had been married for many years before that in chutz la'aretz, and still we're saying that's 10 years after he came to Eretz Yisrael. Now Rashi explains the vort is, in other words, that it might be because they're doing wrong by living in chutz la'aretz. Maybe therefore that's why Hashem is not blessing them with children. So once they're doing the mitzvah of moving to Eretz Yisrael, then that would be different.
Would that be a rule also in this?
So that's what I'm saying. So you have many poskim bring something from the Ozarua who says that Bechlal, even nowadays, the 10-year rule applies only if they live in Eretz Yisrael, not if they live in Chutz Laaretz. Most of the poskim, though, disagree with that and say that, no, the rule does apply across the board. In practice, again, as the Rivosh said, we don't apply it nowadays. And in fact, the Buchacher in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, on Evin Ezer, discusses that we don't force them to get divorced, as the Rivosh is saying, as the Ramah brings the halacha, we don't even tell the guy off, what do you think you're doing? And he explains, he gives a long explanation, because the sfek sfeika, it's a suffix, which one of them it is that's infertile, or if it's just the incompatibility between the two of them, and even if we know for a fact who says he's going to listen, so therefore he says we don't have to even tell him off on it for the first place. With that said, though, the Ritva does say that if they were living in Chutz Laaretz and then they move to Eretz Yisrael, then the clock resets. Even if we say that the 10 years does apply in Chutz Laaretz as well, but nevertheless, if they move to Eretz Yisrael, the fact is the schus of moving to Eretz Yisrael may be a new factor that causes that now they're going to have children. So therefore, so Marsha actually discusses over here the whole matter. Now, there's two ways of looking at it with Avraham. First of all, before we get to that, actually, Tosfos points out that, look, it's the reason why the Gemara is calling it is not a solid raya is because the fact is, we see Avraham is taking a second wife, Hagar. We don't see anything about divorcing his wife. So therefore, so when we're saying that the Chachamim imposed a rule about divorcing after 10 years, then we don't have a proof from that for that from the pasuk. So now Marsha refers over here to something that the Mizrahi on Rashi discusses at some length in connection with this whole story of Avraham marrying Hagar, and he discusses over there. He wants to say, when Hashem had first told Avraham, move to Eretz Yisrael, ve'eschol goy gadol, and I'll make you into a great nation, v'avarecha v'gadlo shmecha, means that Hashem was telling Avraham, now, the Gemara is going to point out soon that Avraham was naturally infertile. So Hashem is telling him that I'm going to give you the gift of fertility. But so now Avraham is starting to wait. When is that going to happen? And after 10 years, he sees he doesn't have children yet with Sarah. So then at that point, he marries Hagar. So Marsha discusses that point, and he says that it may not be so much here we're saying that, yeah, it's the schus of Eretz Yisrael, but you could also say, based on a Gemara and Rosh Hashanah, that it's b'chlal an example of Mashana Mokam, Mashana Mazel, and not necessarily the schus of Eretz Yisrael per se. There is also an explanation. I think it's also in the Mizrahi over there, but I don't remember. It might be in one of the other Mefarshim, who actually takes the view that in a way also Avraham had, when we're saying over here, as Rashi is saying, that maybe it's because of the Aveira of living in Chutz Laaretz. After all, you could say Avraham maybe to a certain extent did wrong by not moving to Eretz Yisrael sooner. After all, we know the Bris Ben Absarim took place in Eretz Yisrael when Avraham was 70. Because we know, we calculate from there, 430 years from there brings us to Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the Pasuk mentions that the Pasuk by Yetzias Mitzrayim mentions that they had been in Mitzrayim 430 years, meaning that was 430 years since the slavery in Mitzrayim was foretold to Avraham Avinu. So he was already in Eretz Yisrael at age 70. So what's he doing then, returning to Haran and staying there till 75 when the Eibishter tells him Lech Lecha? So therefore, you could say, going with what Rashi's saying, that we have von Chutz Laaretz, that there is something wrong in him not having moved to Eretz Yisrael earlier. And that would be why we would say in the Gemara over here that maybe only the clock starts when he moved permanently to Eretz Yisrael at age 75. In any case, Marsha says again that yes, based on the Gemara over here, we're saying over here that primarily we're talking about the schus of Eretz Yisrael. But on the other hand, based on a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, then it might mean that it's more than just a matter of Mashana Mokam, Mashana Mazel. Okay, so we see that all the years that they lived in Chutz Laaretz don't count towards the 10 years. Lefichach. Now, therefore, we also see there are other cases where we don't count towards the 10 years. What if he was sick during the 10 years? What if she was sick during the 10 years? Now, obviously, if we mean that they're sick and they're not able to do tashmish, then there's nothing to talk about. The Rosh actually says we're talking about even if they're physically able to, but we could still say the same gzeira min hashamayim that's making him or her sick. Maybe that same gzeira min hashamayim is also preventing them from having children. Or shneim chavushim bebeis asurim, or they're locked up in jail, and again they're not able to have relations. Ein olam lemin aminyan, then those years don't count towards the 10 years. So now, however, Rava asked Rav Nachman, V'leilaf mi Yitzchak. Instead of learning from Avraham, where it mentions that he waited 10 years, where it implies in the Psukim that he waited 10 years and then he married Hagar. And by the way, I mean, there is also a question, so you could say, so what do you mean? He married Hagar at that point, because that's Sarah asked him to, and if Sarah had asked him to do that 3 years earlier, then he would have married her 3 years earlier. So the Aruch HaNer explains, we know that Sarah was a Nevi'ah. So if she waited until 10 years before she even said to Avraham, you know what, we're not having children, marry Hagar, then that implies that, in other words, that that's because there is a point about there is a point about 10 years. Other Mephoshim also point out, since the Pasuk uses the expression miketz eser shonim, miketz implies at the end of a certain defined time. Otherwise, it would just say achar eser shonim or something to that effect. Miketz suggests there's a certain defined period, and here we get to the end of it, and such and such then happens. Yeah. Okay, so Omalei Rava Rav Nachman. Instead of learning from Avraham, Rava asked Rav Nachman, v'leilaf mi Yitzchak. Instead, why don't we learn from Yitzchak, where he was married to Rivka for 20 years, before they had children. Yitzchak was 40 years old when he married Rivka. And then later on, when Esav and Yaakov were born, Yitzchak ben Shishim Shana, that he was 60 when they were born. So we see that they waited 20 years, and all that time he didn't marry another woman, unlike Avraham married Hagar after 10 years. Yitzchak didn't. Now Rashi and the Pasuk mentions the point that Yitzchak wasn't going to marry a Pilegesh because he was an Ola Tmima, and therefore it's not suitable for him. Tosfos actually points out that Rashi and the Pasuk points out that why Taka did Yitzchak wait 20 years? Because he married Rivka at age 3. At that age, she's not capable of having children anyway. So he waited until she's 13, when she's of childbearing age. Then he started the 10-year clock. And then when 10 years have passed and they have children, then Vayeta, and then they're both davening. So in that case, what's the Gemara even asking that we should learn from Yitzchak? The fact is, in that case, it was 10 years they're waiting from when she's of childbearing age. Tosfos says, remember we learned before that there's a different, they're based on the Gemara earlier, and based on certain midrashim, there was the implication that Rivka was actually around 14 when she married Yitzchak. In that case, then there's not to talk about. Then they didn't wait 10 years and another 10 years because she's not of childbearing age yet. It means they waited 20 years during all the time when she could have been having children. Also, Tosfos says the fact is there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that mentions that in earlier generations they were able to have children at younger ages. Al derech, like we talked about there, that children also matured faster, and therefore, for example, Rivka at 3 had the maturity level of a teenager, of a gdola. The same way over here, Tosfos says physically also we find in other Gemaras that women in those days were able to have children at younger ages. So therefore, not necessarily would Yitzchak have actually had to wait until she's 13 to be of childbearing age. Conceivably, she could have, in fact, had children younger than that, and therefore the Gemara is bothered by the fact as we see that he waited 20 years.
Now it's a Simon Shamashik that the women are having babies 50 and 60 years old.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, Marshall also here discusses this whole point at length, and also brings again what the Mizrahi discusses on Rashi, on that Rashi at the beginning of Parashas Toldos, where again Rashi explains over there that it was really 10 years until she was mature, and then another 10 years that they were waiting, unlike the assumption in all Gemara over here that it was full 20 years waiting. So Tosfos says, so Marsha says, you know what, aside from what Tosfos is answering, which that Rivka was taka married at 14 according to some Midrashim, or that she was able to have children at younger ages, Marsha says, listen, you can say like this: yes, the Gemara is assuming that she was in fact married at age 3 and that he had to wait until she's old enough. But nevertheless, the question is that the fact is we see that he waited only 10 years from when she's of childbearing age, but at that point we see he didn't marry another wife like Avraham did. Instead, he was davening. So that implies, in other words, that even after 10 years, it's not necessarily, you don't necessarily give up at that point. So why don't we learn from Yitzchak? So in other words, Marsha is explaining, the question is not so much, why don't we learn from Yitzchak that he waited 20 years? The question is, why don't we learn from Yitzchak that even after 10 years, there's still an option to daven rather than to marry another wife or divorce his current wife or whatever? Amalei, so Rav Nachman answers him, Yitzchak Oker Hava, because Yitzchak himself was infertile, so he knew that he's incapable of fathering children. Therefore, there's no sense in him marrying another woman, because what good is it going to do? When we're talking about over here in this sugya, again, is where we don't know one way or the other which one of them is infertile, or maybe both of them are fertile, and just there's a genetic incompatibility between them or something. Here, Yitzchak himself knew, as the Gemara is going to explain soon, that he was an Oker, that he was infertile, and therefore, there's no point in him marrying another woman, so we can't derive from him.
Except before that Abraham also was?
Now, the Gemara is going to point that out later. So that's part of the Mizrachis and Maharsha's discussion over here is, does the Gemara know at this point in the discussion that Avraham was also infertile, or does the Gemara only discover that point later on? And at this point, the Gemara is assuming that Avraham thought that he was fertile. That's part of what the Mizrahi discusses over there again, which Maharsha objects to over here, is that to begin with, when Avraham moved to Eretz Yisrael at age 75, Lech Lecha Me'aretzcha, and Hashem tells him, Ve'escha L'goy Gadol, it's Hashem telling him there's going to come a point when you're going to gain the fertility that you haven't had yet. And therefore, Avraham's waiting for 10 years for that to happen, and when he sees that he doesn't have children yet with Sarah, then he marries Hagar. Yitzchak was incapable of having children, and therefore there's no point in him marrying another woman anyway. So the Gemara asks, Yehochi Avraham Nami Okurhava. Well, in that case, yeah, we can find, as the Gemara is going to point out soon, that Avraham was also infertile. So in that case, then how are we learning from him that you have the 10-year deadline? And in fact, that after 10 years he married Hagar. The answer is you're right. As a matter of fact, we're actually not learning from Avraham, from Avraham's 10 years. Then why does it mention by Yitzchak that it was 20 years from when he married Rivka until the twins were born? The reason is Ahumi Boyla the Chidra Bchia Ba'aba, because the fact that the pasuk tells us that it was 20 years before Esav and Yaakov was born is not for us to learn from that you can wait as long as 20 years, but rather the Reb Chiya Ba'aba. We need that information to tell us what Reb Chiya Ba'aba is saying. So Amar Reb Chiya Ba'aba, Amar Reb Yechonon, Laman Nimnu Shnoisav Sho Yishmael, why does the total list at the end of this week's parasha, why does it mention how old Yishmael lived to be? The point of the question, this Gemara is also in Megillah. Rashi explains over there, the question is, Yishmael was a Rasha. So the Torah gives us the lifespans of Tzaddikim. It doesn't give us the lifespans of Rishoyim. So why does it tell us? The Torah Evan actually objects on that and says, we find that Yishmael did Tshuva. So Avas Eson over here explains that maybe in fact there are different opinions on that subject whether in fact Yishmael did Tshuva at the end. Even if he did, you could say that since he wasn't a tzaddik his whole lifetime, unlike the others in Sarah, then therefore the Torah has no reason to mention his age anyway. But what's the reason? To make it clear about the dates of key events in Yaakov's life, because you have the whole calculation at the end of the first parak of Megillah. Rashi brings it at the end of Parashas Toldos, that we know how much older Yishmael was than Yitzchak, and therefore we know how old he was when Yaakov was born, and we know how old he was when he died. Therefore, based on that, we can calculate that Yaakov was 63 when he got the brachas and ran away to Haran. And since later on, based on other psukim, it comes out that he arrived in Haran only when he was 77, then that means that 14 years he spent in Beis Shem and in Beis Aver. Shem had already passed away by that point. He was spending learning in the yeshiva of Aver. We wouldn't know that if the Torah hadn't told us about how long Yishmael lived, and part of that whole calculation, part of that whole chain of calculation, is to know how old was Yishmael when Esav and Yaakov were born, and for that we need to know that 20 years passed from when Yitzchak got married until they were born. So in other words, the point is that with Avraham, when it says that 10 years had passed before he married Hagar, from that we learn that you have a 10-year deadline. But the fact that it says 20 years by Yitzchak is not meant to tell us instead that you could have a 20-year deadline, but rather to tell us something else, to tell us how to sync up the events in Yishmael's and Yitzchak's and Yaakov's lives. So we're still left with, in other words, so we're still left with that the 10 years is the deadline. And yes, even though Avraham, yes, we can say Avraham was awkward, that he was infertile. Nevertheless, the Pasuk would have no reason to tell us that he married Hagar after 10 years in Eretz Yisrael, unless we're meant to learn from him for other cases as well. So that would be why we learn Davka from him and not from Yitzchak. All right, so the Gemara continues on that topic. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Yitzchak Avinu Okru Hayo. Yitzchak Avinu was naturally infertile. Shenemar, as we find in the pasuk, Vayetel Yitzchak LaHashem LeNoichach Ishtay. The pasuk says that Yitzchak was davening to Hashem opposite his wife. Does that mean, in other words, that he's davening on behalf of his wife? Al Ishtay LeNamar, it doesn't say he's davening for his wife that she should be able to have children. Ella LeNoichach. But opposite, Malamacha Shneim Akurim Hoyu. That means that actually, so they're going. Marsha brings from Rashi on the pasuk that it means that each of them is standing in a separate corner and davening. But it means both of them were infertile. So Yitzchak is having to daven Lenoichach Ishtoi. In other words, the point is Marsha explains that that each one of them is davening for the other. When a person is davening for something, so for him to daven for himself is not always going to happen. In chovush matir atzmei beis asurim, a prisoner can't get himself out of jail. So therefore, you have to have somebody else daven for you. So therefore, Yitzchak is davening for Rivka, and we find that with the other imahos as well. We find Rachel when she's not having children, she doesn't daven to Hashem herself. She says to Yaakov, havali banim. Sarah also says to Avraham, "Chamosi alacha, I have a complaint against you. Why did you daven that? Why did you daven that you should have children, and you didn't daven that I should?" In the same way over here, then. So the Gemara had thought to begin with that. Like this: if we say that Rivka was infertile but Yitzchak was not, then we understand that he's davening on her behalf. But then it would have said al ishtay. The fact that it says l'noichach ishtay means that they're each davening for each other. Yad Yosef on the side over here also brings from Yufei Toya, one of the Mephoshim on the Medrash, that says that in that case, why mention the point of the Noichach, that they're opposite each other? Because when each one sees that the other one is davening, then that makes each of them themselves work harder in their own davening. So when Rivka sees that Yitzchak is davening on her behalf, that motivates her more to daven on behalf of Yitzchak and vice versa. So that tells us that they were both infertile. So the Gemara says, "Yehochi va'yosu loy." Then why does the pasuk say, if they're both davening for each other, then why does the pasuk say that Hashem was appeased? The word "vayeta" means that he davened a tremendous amount. Rashi explains in a few places that the shodash osar means to do a tremendous amount of something. So "vayeta" means not just he davened, but he davened a lot. And "vayosar" that Hashem accepted his many tefillos, and Rivka became pregnant. So why "vayosar" loy? What do you mean Hashem answered him? "Vayosar lahem miboyle." It should say that Hashem answered them because both of them are davening. And the answer is "lefisha ein adomit tefillos tzaddik ben tzaddik l'tefillos tzaddik ben rasha," because you can't compare the effect of a tefillah of a tzaddik, who's the son of a tzaddik, namely Yitzchak, to the tefillah of a tzaddik, the child of a rasha, namely Rivka. When it comes to reward and punishment from Hashem, then you have that, the Gemara in Brachos thinks that when we say tzaddik v'raloi is tzaddik ben rasha, and the Gemara slogs that up. A child's not going to be punished for his father's averus. But here we're not talking about punishment. Which one's tefillah is more likely to be accepted that Hashem should be mevatel the gzeira is that tzaddik ben tzaddik has his own mila, and he also has the mila of his parents, and therefore his tefillah is more likely to be accepted. One point is Ben Yehoyada makes a point about that, because you think about it, tzaddik ben tzaddik means not only himself, Yitzchak, Hashem is going to give him, is going to favor him to have children, but also Avraham and Sarah, they deserve to have grandchildren. Mashenken at tzaddik ben rasha, you could say maybe Hashem doesn't want that Besuel and that whole side of the family, Rivka's parents, should have grandchildren. So therefore, so Hashem is more favorable to and more willing to accept Yitzchak's tefillah for it rather than Rivka's.
The whole thing, Avram didn't have children, Yitzchak didn't have children. It seems to be
yes. The Gemara is going to talk about that in the next couple.
Holistic. The Rebbe also did not have any physical children.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in the next few lines of the Gemara. So that's why the tefillah of a tzaddik ben tzaddik is more acceptable. An interesting point about this that comes up lahalacha, it brings in Shulchan Aruch that when you're choosing a chazan for the tzibur, maybe for the same reason, better to have a tzaddik ben tzaddik. On the other hand, then you have poskim who say on the contrary, though. That's when you're talking about to daven for oneself, then we're saying a tzaddik, or for one's immediate family, then a tzaddik, ben tzaddik's tefillah is more acceptable. When you're talking about davening for the tzibur, adrabi, you could say that a tzaddik ben rosha is more likely to have hachna, to have shiflos, to have a feeling of humility and inadequacy in front of Hashem. Because what do you mean? How do I deserve to be davening on behalf of the tzibur and to have my tefillahs accepted? Look what I came from. So the Alter Rebbe points out, you know, it really depends. It's a case by case basis. You got to see what is the mentality of the tzaddik. If you have a choice between two equally qualified people, a tzaddik ben tzaddik and a tzaddik ben rasha, you're going to have to judge on an individual basis and see what their qualities and their characteristics are, and then decide on that basis. You can't say a blanket statement necessarily that one is better than the other, because again, one has the milo of their parents, and the other one has the milo that they have more of a sense of humility before Hashem. I once saw an explanation also that part of the idea is, again, the Gemara in Brachos brings up the possibility, although it slugs it up, that a tzaddik ben tzaddik is also known as tzaddik v'tovloi, and a tzaddik ben rosha is also known as tzaddik v'raloi. So even though the Gemara slugs that up over there and says it's not so, because Hashem doesn't hold the averus of the parents against the children, nevertheless, that may also, to a certain extent, factor in over here. A tzaddik ben tzaddik means, in other words, that he has more smooth sailing in his relationship with the Eibishter. Therefore, he's going to answer his tefillahs right away. Whereas the tzaddik ben rasha is not. The whole point is that his path to Hashem has been a difficult one. He had to overcome obstacles on his own, like Rivka did to be able to live in the environment that she was in and be able to overcome it. And therefore, in token of that, Hashem also doesn't always make life easy for them when it comes to answering their tefillahs right away. And in any case, that's the point. So that's why it says Vayosu Loi, that Hashem answered his tefillahs, even though we're saying they were both davening, and they were davening for each other. The Amar of Yitzchak, Mifnei Mahoyu Avisenu Akurim. So you're mentioning that, yeah, all the others were infertile for a period of time. So why is that? Why were our ancestors infertile? Why were our Avos and Imahos infertile? Mifnei Shakodesh Bochum is Avalos Tfilos and Shal Tzadikim. Because Hashem desires the tefillahs of the Tzadikim. And therefore, so Hashem, in other words, Hashem withholds from them some, in this case, the bracha of children, so that they should daven more and more, and that way there's more tefillahs that are coming from them. It means that this way it makes them greater and closer to Hashem. It means their tefillahs also have an effect on the world at large. There are a variety of explanations. What's the greatness of that? Why Hashem wants their tefillahs? But that's the point. Like this way, it motivates them to daven harder. There are exceptions. For example, it mentions that Leah became pregnant right away. There, Rashi mentions the point, because otherwise there was the threat that Esav might want to take her instead, because after all, there was the understanding that of the two sisters, the older one's going to marry Esav, the younger one Yaakov. So therefore, so Leah was in danger of being taken away by Esav, and therefore Hashem had to make her pregnant right away, so that once she has children, then Esav's not going to bother with her. Anyway, but ordinarily we're saying that otherwise the Avos were according. So yeah, you know, some in the case of the Avos, eventually they did have children. You were mentioning before the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin. In the end, they didn't have children. So ultimately, it's the Eibishter's judgment of these things. Why these things sometimes work out and why sometimes not. Va'amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Laman Nimshal Tfilosin Shal Tzedikim Ke'eser. Here we're saying the pasuk Vayetav Yitzchak LaHashem and Vayosir Loi Hashem. The word eser, besides again, the one meaning of that shodesh is a lot of, yeah. For example, Rashi brings in this connection of pasuk v'hatautim olai divrechem. You've spoken a lot of words against me. So the shodesh eser means a lot of. In addition, also an eser is a type of farm tool. Rashi over here translates it as a shovel. This Gemara is also in Sukkah. There, Rashi translates it as a pitchfork, and Tosfos points out over there that seems to fit better with what the Gemara is going to douch on it. So, V'omer Rabbi Yitzchak, Loman Nimshal Tfilosin Shal Tzadikim Ke'eser. Why is the Tfilah of Tzadikim compared to an Eser, to a shovel or a pitchfork, where we're using the word Vayeta for it? So the answer is Ma Eser is a Mahapachat Tvor B'Gurin M'Mokim L'Mokim, just like this Eser, this farm tool. Is used in the granary to turn over the grain from one place to another. You pick up a shovel full or a pitchfork full of grain and you turn it over. kacht philosophen shall tzedek ma pechas midos shall a kodesh baruch hu mi midas rak zonus l midas rachmanus. The same way that tefillah of tzedekim transforms, turns over Hashem's midas from anger into rachmanus. Now, we don't mean per se that Hashem wasn't angry at Yitzchak and Rivka and at other tzaddikim like that, but nevertheless, we're still saying that there's midas adin and there's midas arachim. In fact, Marashal says, you think about it, what's the point of picking up the grain and turning it over with the shovel or whatever is because you want to separate the straw from the grain. The same way, symbolically, that represents. You have those kind of a mixture of Midas Adin and Midas Arachmim, and you want to separate them out to have pure Midas Arachmim from Hashem. There, and the Tzaddik's Tefillah accomplishes that. Why are we mentioning that point? Dafka by Yitzchak, in that case, why don't we have the word Vayeter by Avraham? Marsha says, because we know that Yitzchak's Midah was Gvura. So therefore, specifically, Gvura and Din are synonyms. So therefore, when it comes to Yitzchak specifically, we want to point out that he successfully, with his Tefillah, he was able to transform that midah of gvura, by which he was naturally infertile, and transform it that he was able to father children, and that Rivka is able to bear children. Therefore the comparison to the Esther. And there's different other points that Mephoshim say on it as well. One of them, one idea being that the shovel, when you turn over the grain with it, it doesn't make any transformation in the grain. It just moves it from point A to point B. The same way at tefillah, even if it doesn't transform a person, but it moves him to a different place, and that alone is reason enough sometimes, and moves him to a different place. Beruchnius, and sometimes that's enough. All that by itself is enough to transform Hashem's judgment against him. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rab Ami, Avraham and Sarah tumtim in hayu. Avraham and Sarah, so here we were talking about Yitzchak and Rivka being infertile, what we mentioned briefly before, that Avraham was too. So now Rab Ami says, Avraham and Sarah were actually tumtim in. We've learned before about a tumtim, which is somebody, there's a membrane covering their genitals, or sometimes you have that there's another unformed flesh or something covering it, and so therefore, you can't easily tell, whether they're a man or a woman. So Avraham and Sarah had that. Tosfos points out that very often with a tumtum, then again, if we're talking about if there's a membrane covering the area, then it's possible to cut it open, and then you'll see what's underneath. Nevertheless, and here apparently that was done. Avraham and Sarah had been married and been having tashmish for many years. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara mentions later on in the Masechta that even if so, if you have a tumtum, even if you cut open the membranes and find that it's a man or a woman respectively, nevertheless they're going to be infertile. Another point, so Avraham and Sarah were tumtumim, even if they had the appropriate operation to cut open and reveal what's there, nevertheless, that still would have meant that they're infertile. And besides that, even the other opinion, that this is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda later in the Masechta, and even the Chachamim disagree, nevertheless, it's uncommon. They say it's possible for a tumtum to father children afterwards, but nevertheless, it's uncommon. So the point is, Avraham, having been a tumtum at one point, is not necessarily... is not naturally going to be able to have children unless Hashem gave him the special ability to. Shenemar, and we know that about Avraham and Sarah because hundreds of years later the Navi Yeshaya says to the Jewish people, Habitu el tsur chutzavtem, look to the rock from which you were carved out, vel makeves burnu kautem, and look to the pit from which you were dug out. Uchtiv, and then he continues in the next pasuk, Habitu el Avraham avichem vel Sarah tchelochem, look towards Avraham your father and towards Sarah who bore you. Meaning the Navi is telling, in context, the Navi is telling the Jewish people, you think that you're coming to build the second base mikdash and there were very few of you and you're surrounded by hostile goyim and you think, how are we ever going to manage? You should realize Avraham and Sarah were only one couple in the entire world, and the Eibush just stood up for them. But here he's using a metaphor of a rock that was carved out and a pit that was dug out. In other words, the point is that Avraham didn't have a normally functioning Eivor Zachrus, a normally functioning male organ, and the Eibush had to, so to speak, carve it and hew it out to make it functional. And the same way Sarah didn't naturally have a burr of a pit, the relevant parts for a woman, and Hashem had to dig them out and make them work. So, and in fact, the pasuk continues. Ki echod, Marsha points out, the pasuk continues. Ki echod kerosiv. Hashem says, I called Avraham a unique one, va'avorcheo va'abehu, and I gave him a bracha, and I increased him. So, in other words, that by nature, he and his wife would have remained echod. They would have remained just one couple, and then that's it. They would have died, and that's the end of it. But instead, because I renamed them Avraham and Sarah, so va'avorcheo va'abehu, then with that, I gave them a bracha, and increased them, that now they have a new mazel, and in mazel Yisrael, and therefore that they had millions of descendants. So but we see that they were tumtumin in the first place. The Maharal gives a reason, so why did the Eivishter do that way? The Eivishter couldn't have had Avraham and Sarah be formed normally. And he says, because the Jewish people are meant to be a whole new thing in the world coming out of nowhere. Sort of like the whole world is created Yesh Me'ayin. The Jewish people also have to, in their own way, be kind of like a Yesh Me'ayin creation. So if Avraham and Sarah had normal function, and they were, then it wouldn't be a new thing. After all, they're the children of their respective parents, and they're descendants of their respective parents. But because they didn't have the natural ability to have children, and Hashem had to actually carve and dig out and create within them a new ability to have children, so therefore it makes it a genuinely new thing, which now the Jewish people can now be formed from that. And the Gemara continues in this vein. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Bavua, Sarei Imenu Ailonis Hoisa. Furthermore, Sarei Imenu was an Ailonis, which an Ailonis is a woman. The Gemara deals with some of the details of it later in the Masechta. So the Gemara deals later in the Masechta with the details of what an Ailonis is. In brief, it's a woman who has, I think we've mentioned it before in this shir, we mentioned at the beginning of the Masechta, that it's a woman who has certain physical characteristics showing that her body has not developed normally. A woman is supposed to usually have, when she reaches puberty, then her body starts, her bodily shape and various other things develop in certain ways, and here with an Ailonis it doesn't happen, and she still has an undeveloped body. So we're saying that Sarah was like that. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "Vatehi Sarah Akora in Lavolod." The pasuk says that Sarah was infertile; she had no child. And that now, if she's infertile, of course she had no child. It means that Philip base Vlad in law, she didn't even have a womb. Or Mephoshim say, what it means is, in other words, that she had exactly like an Ailonis, where normally a mature woman, her womb develops and enlarges and becomes ready to bear a child, and with Sarah it remained undeveloped as it does by an Ailonis. And therefore, as the Gemara had said before, Hashem had to, so to speak, carve out a whole new one within her. This also explains why you have in Parshas Vayera, when the Malachim come and tell Avraham and Sarah that they're going to have a baby, why Sarah laughed is because she knew all along that she doesn't have the physical capability of conceiving and bearing children, and therefore she's wondering how is such a thing going to be possible. Titzfak Sarah Bekirba, she laughed within herself, looking at my body and the way it's functioned all these years, how is this going to happen?
How is Avraham marrying Nailonis?
Well, it was before Matan Torah, first of all. He's not, I mean, fine, you have a mitzvah pruvu. It's possible that he didn't know, first of all. But second of all, we said that he himself was an okru. He himself, we said, was a tumtum. So in that case, there's not necessarily an issue with it. In fact, earlier in the perek, in fact, the Gemara makes exactly that point, and this is brought lahalacha, that if a man knows that he's infertile, then there's no reason, there's no 10-year limit, and there's no nothing. He can marry whatever woman he wants, whether she's capable of having children or not, because one way or the other, they're not having children anyhow. So the Gemara continues. Amar of Yehuda. Now, so we said in the Mishnah that we have this 10-year limit, but Amar of Yehuda braided of Shmuel bar Shilas Mishmei Derav Loi Shonu Ela B'Doros Hirishonim. This 10-year limit is only in the earlier generations, Sheshestan Merubis, where they lived long lives. They lived, Avram and Avram lived to 175 before the generations before him lived hundreds of years. But, says Rav Yehuda, in later generations where they live much shorter lives, then you don't want to wait 10 years. That's a significant chunk of a couple's life, a couple's lifetime. So instead, the limit is 2.5 years corresponding to 3 pregnancies. The reason is because you have each pregnancy would be 9 months. In between one and the next, you have a certain number, you have a certain amount of yamei tumah. The woman is tamei for a certain amount of time after the birth, so that she and her husband can have relations. So once you add it all together, then you come out, once you add it all together, then you come out with 30 months, which is 2.5 years. So therefore, so he says that would be the deadline at that point. Rabba, Omer Rav Nachman, Sholish Shonim. Rabba says in the name of Rav Nachman, I agree with the basic point, but it wouldn't be only 2.5 years. It would be 3 full years. Keneged Sholish Pekidus, corresponding to 3 times of Hashem remembering women and deciding that they're going to have a child. De Omamar, as we learn in Rosh Hashanah, and we've learned it before. The Rosh Hashanah Nifkada Sora Rocha Vachana, that Hashem remembered each of these women, Sora Rocha and Chana, on Rosh Hashanah, and decided that they should have children that year. So therefore, in other words, so Rabbah is saying you have to wait. So you have to wait 3 years, because 3 times you have to see whether maybe on Rosh Hashanah, maybe this Rosh Hashanah, Hashem has decided that they're going to have children. Once you have 3 times has passed, three potential pregnancies according to Rav Yehuda, or three potential Rosh Hashanah decisions according to Rabbah, then already you have a chazaka that they're not going to have children. And since, again, people don't live that long nowadays, you don't want to wait 10 full years, they should be getting divorced at that point. But Omar Rabbah lesnu lahani klali. However, Rabbah says those rules don't really apply. Now, if it was Rabbah saying before in the name of Rav Nachman, then it would mean that he said that in the name of Rav Nachman, but he himself disagrees. It's also possible, though, that the Girsa over here is Rava. We often find Rava saying in the name of Rav Nachman, and therefore, so now it would be Rabbah who's objecting and saying that can't possibly be correct. Mehdi, because after all, let's consider. Masnissin Mantakin. Who was it that set up the Mishnayos in the form that we have them? Rebbe. So you had Mishnayos that go back long before Rebbe, but Rebbe is the one who put the Mishnayos into their final form as we have them nowadays. V'habi made David imut shani. Now, already in David HaMelech's time, which is hundreds of years before Rebbe, already people were living much shorter lives. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, and David says in Tehillim, Yemei shnei senim b'heaven shivim shana. Our days are going to be usually 70 years. V'im b'gvoras shemayim shana. So already in David's times, the average lifespan was much shorter. Akosif points out, by the way, that now the capital begins, Tfilah Moshe Isha Alekim, and Moshe himself lived to be 120. So Hakosif says, evidently we see that Tfilah Moshe doesn't mean that Moshe actually composed it. It means it's a Tfilah about Moshe or something like that. It doesn't mean that Moshe himself actually wrote it. Other Mephoshim say the other way around, actually. It might be that Moshe wrote the original and then David re-edited it and included it in Sefer Tehillim. Another point as well, some Mephoshim make the point, is we know Moshe was 80 years old, when they were 79 to be exact, when the Eibishter first sent him to Paray to take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. So he may have composed this capital before that even, and thinking, you know, B'derech HaTeva, how much more do I have to live? As far as he knows, there's nothing else he has to accomplish in life. He's grazing Yisra's sheep. He doesn't know that there's anything else still awaiting him. As far as he knows, he doesn't have long to live. And then all of a sudden, the Eibishter comes to him in the snare and tells him, I have a job for you, and he ends up leading the Jewish people for 40 years. So he may well have said, because at the time when he composed that, maybe Taka, he figured that's all he's going to live. In any case, so the point is, already in David's times, and maybe even earlier, already people were living much shorter lives. And yet the Mishnah includes the 10-year deadline, showing, in other words, that it is that 10 years is 10 years, even though people live much shorter lives than they did in the times of the others. To be sure, also, I mean, even Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbah didn't mean that we're gonna the fact is you have the generations before the Mabul lived to 900 and lived to 900 and some years. Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov lived only to 100 and something. Nevertheless, though, we mean, in other words, at some point the Chachamim would have had a need to reevaluate based on the shorter life expectancy, and then they would have reduced it to 2.5 or 3 years. But again, Rabbah is saying not so. We see that even in Rebbe's times, we still have 10 years mentioned in the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, now we had said that he has to divorce his wife after the 10 years and give her a ksuba. Now the Mishnah, then the Braisa said, because he might not have the schus to be built up with children through her. The question is, how do you know that it's because of him? Maybe it's because she lacks the schus to have children, and in that case, he shouldn't have to give her a ksuba. And the answer is E, keeping to like mafkada, puva rivya, loima ansha. The answer is because women don't have a mitzvah, pruvu, so therefore Hashem wouldn't punish her in that way by withholding children, meaning the Orach HaShulchan explains, of course, she might want children anyway, like we said before, a person wants children to be able to help them out in their old age and so forth, but that would apply equally well to her and her husband. If we're talking about a punishment that might affect more specifically one of them, there's no reason why that Hashem would choose infertility to affect her rather than her husband, when that consideration is the consideration of wanting to have children is equal by both of them, and the consideration of piri v'rivya applies only to the husband. Therefore, we can assume that if they don't have children, by default, we have to assume it's because the husband doesn't have the schus, and therefore he's going to have to divorce her, but he is going to have to pay her ksuba because it's not her fault that he's having to divorce her. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogo'ola, Chof Cheshvin, the Rebbe Rashab's Yom Oladis. The Rebbe Rashab writes in one of his Maimorim, we know we have 248 mitzvahs haseh, and it's brought in Sfarim that those correspond to the 248 limbs of the body. So that means, in other words, the chayus of a person's body in general, and each limb in particular, comes from alakus. Every body part, you do a mitzvah with it, or at least through the mitzvah, then there's drawn into it chayus, and that's what that body part lives from that. When Mashiach comes, then we will see begolui how the life force of all of the body parts is from alakus. Continuing with halachas of muktzah, we started talking about when you have food that is meant for human consumption, but it's inedible on Shabbos, then it's muktzah. So then you have also things that are unusable on Shabbos. For example, pieces of wood, feathers, skins, wool or linen, as well as animals. We talked about before that that animals are muktzah on Shabbos, and we talked about that many poskim say that would apply to pets as well. So all those kinds of things, and other examples like that are muktzah because they don't have any function on Shabbos. Another example would be broken.
Designate the wood for a doorstop, something before Shabbos.
If you designate it before Shabbos, that's different. But otherwise it's called muktzah machmas gufay. Another example would be a broken keli where it's completely non-functional. One exception is if a glass keli breaks on Shabbos, then you're allowed to sweep up the glass because otherwise it's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.